Good morning. It is 9:14 a.m. Today is Tuesday, November 15, 2016, and we will start our city council briefing. I did want to note for the record, we do have a quorum, and we will start with our invocation and our Pledge of Allegiance. Colleagues, in the absence of our mayor and deputy mayor, and in case I need to step out, I will be appointing Ms. Jennifer Staubach-Gates as the chair presiding. And so I wanted to let you know, do you all have any concerns with that? Hearing none, thank you very much, colleagues. I appreciate that opportunity. And so we will start with the invocation. And we have Father Gaston Giansinti, and I apologize if I didn't pronounce it right. He's from St. Bernard of Clairvaux Catholic Church. It is in District 9. Mr. Clayton is the representative. Reverend Gaston Giansinti is a Catholic priest in the Institute of the Incarnate Word, working for the Diocese of Dallas as a pastor at St. Bernard of Clairvaux Catholic Church in District 9. Reverend Gaston, excuse me, was born in Argentina in 1980 and is the second to eight brothers and sisters. He studied in Argentina as well as in the Cheverly, Maryland, and became a priest in December of 2005. He worked as an assistant pastor at St. James Church in Mount Rainier, Maryland, and St. Michael's Church in Brooklyn, New York. Since July 2010, he has been working at St. Bernard Catholic Church and school. St. Bernard Catholic Church was, has greatly increased its members since offering spiritual guidance to the people of the area and anyone else in need throughout its numerous programs. We all please stand and remain standing after his invocation, as well as we will ask Ms. Young if she would lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay.
All-powerful and ever-living God, we thank you for the grace of being here today to serve the people entrusted to us. O Lord, you are the source of every authority on earth. We ask you to pour down your light upon these members of the City Council as they meet today. Grant them respect to your divine law, so that they may not deviate from your commands. Grant them respect for the law of nature, which you have written in every creature for the care of life and nature. Grant them your wisdom to enact laws in justice and mercy for the peace of society. Grant them a heart for the poor, the homeless, the sick, and the forgotten members of society. Let them honor you by their love to you and their neighbors, and by the private and public behavior. And finally, let us, we, the religious leader, set an example of respect and love for each other, as our teacher Jesus taught us. Grant this through him who lives and reigns with the Father and the Holy Spirit, one God forever and ever.
Thank you, Father, and thank you, Ms. Young. We will, I think I noted that the Mayor Mike Rawlings is out, as well as Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Eric Wilson. And we will start with our, we'll continue with special presentations. And I believe Mr. Thomas has one.
All right. Good morning. Thank you, Madam Mayor. Today is an exciting day because we want to acknowledge people who've done a lot of hard work. Many of you have been hearing about this effort, the rebirth of Redbird, and so I want to thank my colleagues for their support and advocacy in supporting the Neighborhood Plus initiative. And as our colleague, Councilmember Young, calls it Casey Plus, and I take that as an honor because I believe this initiative is something that has the ability to really impact neighborhoods. And so today, what we want to do is we want to show Neighborhood Plus in action. So I want to take a moment. I want to acknowledge first and foremost the residents and those who've been a part of the Rebirth of Redbird Advisory Council. If you're here, if you would please stand. I want to just take a moment and say thank you, and I appreciate you coming. I hope you enjoyed the breakfast this morning. It was in your honor, along with staff that worked close with you, so I want to thank you for being here, and we're going to continue the work. You've had a great impact on the Redbird area, on Southern Dallas, and then on Dallas as a whole, so I want to thank you, and at this time, we're going to acknowledge some staff members, so you may be seated. We're going to have you come up in a little bit. So, first, each of us, as you know, those of us may not know, chose a target area in our district for our Neighborhood Plus target area. My area was Redbird. And I also want to acknowledge Ms. Allen Sims, who's chief of Neighborhood Plus. Stan Allen, thank you for your leadership. And let's give him a round of applause. Since Neighborhood Plus is a collective impact, we had some interaction with DISD, and so whenever we needed any support from the schools, Alan was able to talk to Dr. Hinojosa and Dr. Wilson and make sure that we had the support for the education area. So at this time, I want to acknowledge some of the staff that was a part of the Rebirth of Redbird leadership team. So first and foremost, I'm going to have Mr. Tyrone McGill to come up. And Cody said he came. Come on up, Tyrone. At our neighborhood meetings, whenever somebody would raise their hand and have an issue, he would always say, you have a problem, just call Tyrone. And so he did that. So I want to take a minute and say thank you for your hard work and your commitment. Appreciate you. Next is Cody Robinson. I want to say thank you for your commitment, and we were just recently over at a troubled area, and you were, boy, I tell you, you had the most stern look on your face I had ever seen, because you wanted them to know that it was important for this particular business, how critical it is that they are good partners in what we're doing at Redbird. So I want to say thank you for your hard work as well. Next, Mr. Columbus York. There hasn't been a neighborhood association meeting that I've been at that you haven't been at on the South Central side, so I want to thank you for your hard work and your commitment as well. Next, Jason Nay. When the residents of Redbird had questions about Twin Falls Park and needing asking for parking lots and other things, Jason was right there to answer all the questions that they had. So, Jason, I want to say thank you, and here you are. And I do want to acknowledge a couple people who aren't present. Lee McKinney, who's Assistant Director of Economic Development. She was on the team as far as economic development. When the residents of Redbird had any questions about why we haven't been able to get the type of development they want, she was able to tell them what we need to do in order to make that happen, and we've been aggressively moving in that direction. And then next, I want to thank Major Danny Williams, because he's been really committed to making sure the area is safe. I tell people all the time, especially the residents, if you want development, we got to have clean, safe neighborhoods, and safe is first and foremost. And so whatever we needed down that area, he was Danny on the spot, and he made it happen. So I wanted to acknowledge him. And then last but definitely not least, you know, every team needs a quarterback. My role was the coach, and fortunately at this time in Dallas, we can say our coach is doing a great job. And so I emulated myself this year after Jason Garrett. But you got to have a great quarterback. No offense to Romo, but our quarterback has done a super job. She has been my right arm and left arm and everything else for the neighborhood, and they have grown to know her, love her, and respect her. So at this time, I want to bring up our quarterback of Rebirth the Redbird, Ms. Karen Riley. Karen, I want to say thank you for your commitment, for answering the early morning text, the late night text, and all the other texts that came, because the Redbird area deserved it, and you showed them that commitment and that love and that respect. And so I appreciate everything that you've done and everything you're going to do in the future and how we're going to work together to make Southern Dallas great. Thank you so much. And now I want you to say a few words.
Wow, this is such an honor to our city manager, mayor in his absence, Ms. Alonzo, serving as deputy mayor, and the council. Thank you so much for this recognition, Mr. Thomas. He's right. He will text you, call you anytime, day or night, and expects a response. I would like to very quickly thank my staff who is here today, Monique Ward, Sandra Bowie, Kevin Acosta, Seth O'Kuth, Joe Yanez, Brian Price, and Lizzie Loomis. Hope I didn't miss anybody. Thank you all. They too woke up early on Saturday mornings and helped me out, brought easels and boards and paper and pens and suitcases full of stuff. So I do appreciate them as well. We've acknowledged my advisory council, but again, thank you to all of you who have served and continue to serve, and we still have work to do. Finally, but last but not least, there is someone who's very special here today with me, and I just want to say thank you to my dad, James Riley, who he's my greatest cheerleader. In the loss of my mother last year, he has stepped up to the plate, and I love him with all of my heart. Thank you.
Colleagues, I just want you to know, and I know each of you have started your Neighborhood Plus initiative, but this is the type of results that if you put the work and the commitment and the dedication into it, these are the type of results that this initiative can give. So, I want to thank you for all of your support, and I want to have the advisory council and staff to come up so we can take a portrait. Yeah. While they're coming up, I see LaShawn Watts, who is the general manager for the Rebirth of Redbird Target, or the Redbird Corridor Target area. I want to thank you for you being a partner and you taking the next step and taking the group to the next level. So thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. And thanks to all of you, especially our advisory council, all those from the community. Colleagues, we always like to welcome board members that come into our meetings, and I wanted to recognize Amir Rupani. He is our DFW Airport board member. And Mr. Rupani brought some guests. We have three representatives from India with us today. They are, and I apologize if I mispronounce it, but it's Ashish Salar. He's a member of the Legislative Assembly. Amit Mittal and Mac Ajani. They are here to meet with local Indian communities to answer questions and discuss any concerns they have regarding current events in India. We would like to welcome them and extend our best wishes for a productive and pleasant stay in Dallas. And I always tell everybody, when you come to Dallas, you spend your money and then you can leave. So, colleagues, if you please help me welcome them to our city. And if you all don't mind, if we can all gather so we can take a quick picture and do it more formally. Thank you. Thank you, colleagues, very much. Real quick, before we start our open mic speakers, Mr. Callahan had an announcement.
Yeah, I just wanted to share with the audience and everyone here that former Dallas City Councilman from Southeast Dallas, Dr. John A. Walton, passed away recently. And John was a friend of mine, a client of mine, and a former chairman of our Southeast Dallas Chamber of Commerce. I just wanted to send my condolences to his wife, Shirley, and his son, Chuck, and the rest of his family. So just wanted that to be known. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. Mr. Magoo.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And just as a point of personal privilege, my son's 10th birthday is today, so I told him I'd wish him happy birthday from the horseshoe. So, happy birthday, Noah.
They stated earlier, family, family, family. We will start our open mic speakers, Madam Secretary.
Good morning. Your first five registered speakers are Robert Ceccarelli, Ricky Gonzalez, Amber Sims, Casey Pierce, and Jeffrey Tidwell. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council, shall be removed from the room. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on the monitor. When your time is up, please stop and address your comments only to Mayor Alonzo. If you have any handouts, go ahead and hand it to the officer to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker, Robert Ceccarelli.
Good morning, everybody. Before I give my report at a homeless meeting, I just want to let you know I was at the West End last night. It's been going on for months. There's 75 teenagers, no cops at all, between 7 and midnight. Except right now, there are 8 cops down there right now. And very concerned, the West End's out of control. The teenagers are taking control of it immensely. I'm talking about the DART rail station down there. And please do something immediately, I mean ASAP. Thank you. Here's my report about the homeless before you get the bogus report from the Homeless Commission. Three city council members have been to the meetings. I've been to eight of them. One member went to one meeting. One city council member stayed for an hour and left. And congratulations, Mr. Medrano. You've been to several meetings. Thank you very much. And the mayor, no meetings at all, none, except the last meeting for 20 minutes. I'm going to get, so that shows what the homeless are facing, situations which you're telling you want to help, but there's the evidence you don't want to help. Trust me. I'm going to get to the crux of it right now. Perm supportive housing and shelters. Perm supportive housing will take years to make, even if you make the bond election. Ron Stretcher, I'm sure you all heard of him, he says we're in a crisis right now. We need the Dawson State Jail, DISD buildings right now. Because if you're talking about the permanent supportive housing, the homeless will stay on the streets. It takes at least a year to get permanent supportive housing. And you're getting bogus information from the Homeless Commission because none of them are homeless. None of the Homeless Commission members are homeless to tell you what it feels like, what they have to go through each day, how long it takes, and the discrimination that's going against the homeless. You're not going to get that in a report. Trust me, I've been to all the meetings. Beware of this report. The 250 homeless people that came down here, they were not looking for permanent supportive housing. They were looking at what Ron Stretcher is talking about. Temporary supportive housing, housing right away. And what I'm very distraught about are these vouchers, and the city council members voted against it. Now, where are these people going to go? You say you want to help the homeless, but you voted against it, and they're going to be staying on the streets. I'll repeat, you voted against it. You're going to be staying on the streets. Permanent supportive housing has got to go. You need to look into the DISD buildings and Dawson State Jail for homeless right away, because if not, they're on the streets. You're not going to get that report. If you do, it's going to be buried in what the permanent supportive housing with the Homeless Commission. Also, felonies with apartments. I have a theft enhanced. It's a misdemeanor enhanced to a felony. I cannot find an apartment. If I do find one, it's in bad areas like Oasis and like the one across from the Oasis and things like that. I'm just saying to you that please take my please take me seriously. I know what I'm talking about. This is a direct report. Please. Point of a supportive housing, put it on the back burner right now. You got to. They're going to stay on the streets for years. Cottages.
Thank you.
Look
thank
at the
you
cottages.
Very much.
The big disgrace there.
Appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your next speaker, Ricky Gonzalez.
Take care of the homeless, please. My name is Ricky Gonzalez. I live at 4283 South Crest Haven. I've been there 25 years. Let me say this real quick. As I stand here and speak, I don't speak as a 20-year-old from the bottom. I'm speaking as a seasoned citizen with 20 years of experience in community service. So when I write you guys, the least I expect is some kind of response. But what I don't expect is a response telling me how to communicate my issues. For the city manager to tell me how to communicate is wrong. That's why I'm missing work today to be here so I can communicate with everybody, because I was not going to meet with him. Having said that, when I spoke here, I was the first person in August that spoke. When y'all came back from break, I shared, y'all allowed me enough time to share several stories. I did share a story about a bullet whizzing by my house, whizzing by me. It was a nasty experience. But let me tell you, it's not as nasty as 10 days ago, I had to share a drive-by shooting story with my daughter. I had to explain to her what just happened out in front of my house. And then when I responded in writing to that city manager, he responded trying to tell me how to communicate. I have issues with the DPD over at the Northwest Precinct. There's at least a group of them. And if I call them a band of misfits, I don't want to be corrected. I've been through 20 years of this. 10 days ago, I had to explain to my 6-year-old daughter what it was like, what just happened out in front of our house. And let's go to 24 hours ago. Let's go to Sunday, 36 hours ago, Sunday. My wife and I'm cleaning my car out in front. I watched somebody drive by in Willie's car, but it's not Willie. Later, I find out his car was stolen from the church parking lot in front of my house. All the cars are ransacked. Then I see this young black guy. He keeps roaming our streets. The same guy I saw drive by. The police showed up, I don't know, an hour or two later. It's not as urgent. My wife went over and identified him. I'm doing other things. I'm actually driving around the neighborhood looking for the person. So, because there's police finally around. This goes on all day, you guys. I'm still cleaning my car. It's 11 o'clock at night. I got people roaming, going in circles. What the hell's going on? So I follow them up to the convenience store. They've been burglarized. So I go around the block. I'm thinking, okay, well, let me just go see what's going on. I go back up there. I hang out with them. They were burglarized. They got it on cameras. We're waiting for the police to deal with all that. Police show up. They eventually review the tape. They show that I missed the guy crossing the street by 5 seconds or less, going down, heading down the alley to where my house is. So I'm done playing with the police at 1:30 Sunday night. I started at 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon. By the time I went to bed, it was 3:30, you guys. I knew he was going to come rolling through my neighborhood again. So y'all remember Trayvon Martin? Do y'all know what's going through my head when I got a young black guy roaming my streets, burglarizing buildings, burglarizing cars, stealing cars in my face, all within a block of my house, all day Sunday? I didn't pull out a gun, but I had a rope in my back pocket because if we crossed paths, he was going to be there when the police showed up. I need help out there, you guys, and I don't have the support from the DPD at all at Northwest. When you get beyond that badge, I've seen it. It's nasty.
Thank you.
20 years I've seen it. Adam, please. You talked to me earlier, and I need your help.
Thank you, sir.
Can I respond? So, yes, Mr. Goss, thank you for coming. And I actually spoke to our interim chief, and we'll be setting up a meeting with you. And I believe you have a relationship with our chief because he was over the Northwest Division.
I have a great relationship with the
so we
chief.
Will definitely be calling you and meeting with you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
I need your help.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Your next speaker is Amber Sims. Hi, everyone. My name is Amber Sims, and good morning. I live at 2700 Live Oak, Apartment 205, Dallas, Texas, 75204. I am here today speaking in support of Mothers Against Police Brutality, which has put forward reforms to change policing in the federal, state, and local level. You can see the whole set of policies on their website. The specific proposal I want to describe today concerns drug testing of officers in the period immediately following fatal shootings by the police. We know that officers are randomly tested from time to time. Our proposal is a drug test on any involved officer in the use of deadly force. Officers who discharge their weapon against a suspect or are in custody should be drug tested shortly after the incident. Within the hour would be preferable. If an officer driving is involved in a collision or runs over a pedestrian, that officer is likely to be drug tested for alcohol use. Such a test will reveal if the officer's judgment or coordination is impaired and can provide insight in our understanding of the traffic incidents. Just as in a vehicle collision, the results of a drug test will address the key issue of an officer's state of mind upon the use of deadly force against a member of the public. Such tests are routinely done on the person shot or otherwise injured by an officer, and those tests are quickly publicized in the negative portrayal of the victim in the media. An officer's drug use is no less relevant than the victim's for understanding of what actually happened in an officer-involved shooting and should be released. This is being done in other cities. For example, the St. Louis Police Department started drug tests of officers involved in a shooting or a car wreck this past January. I thank you for your time and consideration on this issue, and I hope that you all have a great day.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Casey Pierce.
Good morning. Casey Pierce, 6047 Parkdale, Dallas, 75227. I'm here to speak about my neighborhood's enthusiastic support in favor of the Loop Trail, which you're going to get a presentation about here briefly. I'm the vice president of the Parkdale Lawnview Association of Neighbors, or PLAN. This is something that we've been wanting to have in our neighborhood for many, many years. About 15 years ago, Councilman Leo Cheney appointed me to serve on an economic development task force committee for our community. And one of the things we started to look at was, hey, there's this really great big forest out here, like at our backyard, that the city just purchased. So maybe we could use ecotourism as an economic development generator. So we started to focus on that. A couple years later, I, along with some other community opinion leaders in South Dallas, created a nonprofit called Groundwork Dallas. What Groundwork Dallas did was we started building soft surface trails in the Great Trinity Forest. Those trails are still there. Those trails are still being used today. There are many more people using those trails. They connect from Sine and Jim Miller all the way south to where the Audubon Center is now. Wasn't even there before when we started building these trails. So we know that there is, you know, there's an active user base for trails in this area. And specifically the what's called the Spine Trail that's going to go from the portion that's going to go from White Rock Lake down to the Audubon Center. That's going to cut right through our neighborhood. We really want this. We've been working on it for so many years. We really want to see it. Neighbors get out in my neighborhood. They put their bicycles and their cars, and they drive to other trails in the city to use those trails. And then they drive home, and that's ridiculous. It shouldn't have to be that way. We've got a trail that's supposed to come through our neighborhood that's going to connect us with other trails in the city. We want it now. We wanted it yesterday. It needs to be happening now, not 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now. We would like to see this happen. We would like to see it. We're supportive. The trails will be used. It's going to get used. The trails that are there are already getting used. In addition, there's also the economic development component. This is going to help spur some economic development in the areas of South Dallas between all the way down to the White Rock, well, from White Rock Creek all the way down to the Audubon Center. So we know that this is going to be helpful, and we would like to encourage all of you to support this portion of the trail. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Jeffrey Tidwell.
Hello, Jeffrey Tidwell. Thanks for the privilege. I'm here to echo Ms. Casey's sentiments. I live in Urbandale, representing Urbandale Neighbors. And same thing, I'm someone that's used these areas for literally 25 years. The trails
are. Is your mic on, or can you get closer?
Pardon?
There you go.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, I've used these trails in these areas literally for a quarter century. There's established footpaths, like Ms. Casey said. There's people that have blazed the way. The utility right-of-ways can be utilized. And this is a wonderful thing that the city of Dallas has to share with citizens of this city and others as well. Like she said, I'm one of these people that jumps on the DART train or in my vehicle and goes to loop trails in different parts of our city, up in Richardson, Plano, Grapevine. And I'll just make it concise and easy on myself and everyone else and paraphrase what some neighbors put together for me, which is the support for the full implementation and speedy completion of the proposed loop trail project, additional linear feed trails along the route. The trail would provide residents unsurpassed recreational destination within arm's reach of the entire city with a completed loop that would unite our neighborhoods locally and an opportunity to set a new model in recreational planning for the city, the state, and, of course, our nation and the world, being a world city now. The large metropolitan region that we have is not unfamiliar with the benefits and efficiency of loop configuration. Imagine if 635 or loop 12 were missing 10 and 5 mile segments, and how this would represent a tiny fraction of the project, but would have an enormous cost to the and overall benefits and usefulness of these critical public right-of-ways. The speedy completion is probably the main thing, and this will connect trails in Dallas so they don't abruptly end in obscure places, promotes the healthy lifestyle. It includes the southern sector of the city, which is always of great importance to any issues here in the city of Dallas. Research shows that trails drive economic investment, revitalization of communities, development near, create safety and traffic in isolated places. They pay for themselves in a short period of time, with investment, retail attractions, and developments around them. Everybody wants this in our area because it's, think of it like this. It's great wood trim for the city, and everybody likes wood trim. So it makes it a completed model of what we're all going for, which is more use of these type of areas that link the plans with the parks and the river bottoms and everything else. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Madam Mayor, this concludes your 5 registered speakers.
We're going to go ahead and do the last 2.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Dolores Phillips.
Name is Dolores Phillips, address 1050 North 360 D31 Grand Prairie, Texas. You do have handouts. That's the evaluations from Dr. Cronson and Dr. Paulman, undiagnosing me after being intentionally misdiagnosed as bipolar because of this massive cover-up. It has everything to do with everything. I'm the one going to stand and endure your inevitable repercussions for being a minority, speaking of injustices in the city of Dallas. October 25th, 2013, with the meeting that was instructed by Mayor Rollins, you don't see on the video release of DPD social worker Belize Thorne coming downstairs to get the court documents that I was going to mail once I left the DPD meeting. You don't see a DAPT coming. You don't see the anger of Corporal Cotner. This brother just spoke of fear, and I watched a police officer with a gun, a badge, and a uniform become angry and arrest me for no probable cause except for to dehumanize, to inflict fear, to prey on the fear, and then eventually get cooperation by fear. I'm here to share with you that Dallas is rebuilding because you fail to hear the repetitive pleas, the due pleas of citizens, officers who called anonymously for help because they was afraid they would endure the same thing as Nick Novello. When I went to Green Oaks, I saw the process that Nick Novello, DPD officer Nick Novello, was afraid that he was going to succumb to and lose his job because he whistleblowed about the corruption that was in DPD. And let me say this, that brother Chief Brown, he's the biggest scapegoat that Dallas has had in a long, long time. Chief Kunkel is one of the wisest men I know. He said before he retired, he said, hey, sometimes it's a time to get out when the getting is good. I wrote Chief Kunkel. I said, please, please sit down and speak with me. He never did. I believe he did his own investigation, and it was so horrific what had happened, he didn't want to touch it because he didn't want his name connected with what was going on behind the scenes. DPD was internally dysfunctional before Chief Brown inherited the madness. I'm here to share with you that just as everybody say that they're surprised that President-elect Donald Trump won, you can't bully people's votes no more. You can't do that anymore. Time is up for that. You've angered non-minorities, the poor. You've angered minorities, Asians, women, LGBT, queer, heterosexuals. And let me say this. It was never LGBT brothers and sisters, queer sisters under attack. It was always heterosexuality under attack, straight heterosexuality. I'm enduring the repercussions for standing and saying I don't open to females. That was another reason that I was taking the Green Oaks. We're going to tell it how it should be told, and it's a massive, massive cover-up, and I'm the one to take your blows, get knocked down, and get back up. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Your final speaker, Jim Hemsworth. Not present. I'm sorry. He's present.
My name is Paul Driscoll. I'm the CEO of Hill & Wilkinson. We are the general contractor for...
I'm sorry, sir. Did you sign in?
Pardon?
He did.
Jim Hemsworth?
That's Jim. And Jim, if Jim needs to speak, then that's fine.
Yes.
Jim needs to speak?
Respectfully.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Jim Hemsworth. I'm with Hill & Wilkinson General Contractors. I just called to register both Paul and I yesterday, not knowing that I was signed up to be the speaker. But we've been selected as the general contractor for the 4P development, the Pacific Park Plaza. Wanted to just say that we're a contractor. General contractor's been in business about 48 years. We do approximately $450 million volume a year, both in the public sector and the private sector. We're proud to be associated with this project. We're committed to building the project on time and in budget. And we're working for a client that is committed for a 30% minority commitment on subcontractors, and we'll be working with John here to achieve that. I think that's all I've got to say.
We'll now move to the voting agenda.
Thank you.
Item 1, approval of minutes of the November 2nd, 2016 City Council meeting.
So moved.
There's a motion.
Second.
And a second. Any discussion? Any changes? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? And the ayes have it.
There are no board and commission appointments today. Therefore, Madam Mayor, your briefings follow.
Okay, Mr. Gonzalez.
Madam Mayor and Council, this morning we have a couple of briefings that will come principally from our Parks and Rec Department. Willis Winters will be introducing the first one and delivering the second one. So, Willis, if you'll take it from here.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Mayor, members of the City Council. We have two briefings for you this morning. The first is a project called the Loop Trail. It will be presented by the Circuit Trail Conservancy. And I'd like to give you a brief introduction of that project. Park and Recreation Department's philosophy in the past has been to build the maximum number of trail miles versus building the oftentimes more expensive connections that link separate trails. This strategy has resulted in approximately 153 miles of existing trail. We also have another 50 miles of linear trails that are currently in design or construction. Right now, there are more than 2 million users a year on our existing trails based on our trail counter system that has been set up on linear trails and loop trails throughout the city. However, this trail system is discontinuous between major linear trail segments. We have successfully completed a connection that links the White Rock Greenbelt Trail with the Preston Ridge Trail. We're also partnering with Dallas County on working to create another link that will tie the North Haven Trail over US 75 to the White Rock Creek Greenbelt Trail and the forthcoming SOPAC Trail. What we need to focus on now is connecting these various segments and components of the city's hike and bike trail system together to create a grand loop trail called the Circuit Trail that will tie many of our city's neighborhoods and parks together into a comprehensive and truly integrated network that will be accessible throughout the entire city of Dallas. The Circuit Trail Conservancy will provide crucial connections that will further enhance our trail system by creating a dedicated loop trail in the core of Dallas. It will cover mostly the most costly portions of the trail system that remain to be built. It will provide an endowment for O&M that will reduce the impact on future general fund budgets. It will provide multiple connections between southern and northern Dallas, and it will also connect our city and our trail system between Dallas and Fort Worth through the VeloWeb Trail. So right now I'd like to introduce Mr. Jeff Ellerman, who is with the Circuit Trail Conservancy, and he will give you the briefing this morning. Jeff?
Well, good morning, and it's a tremendous opportunity for us to thank everybody for allowing us to present today. On behalf of the Circuit Trail Conservancy, we've been working really hard on a project to link and connect our trails. This all started for us a couple years ago when Larry Dale and I were riding our bikes, and it was incredibly frustrating that, you know, we're on the trails don't connect. We've been riding White Rock Lake forever. We have trails that are in place, but they don't connect, and the roads just aren't safe, and to ride bikes. And so we saw the mayor, who is a friend, and we said, Mr. Mayor, what can we do about this, and why don't these trails connect? Is it about money? Is it about leadership? What can we do? And he said, it needs to be a private-public partnership. We need your help. We would love it if you guys would take this on, and I want you to meet with Willis Winters. And so we met with Willis and Philip Henderson, who's our trail guru. We've added Rick Perdue, Joseph Pitchford, Mike Terry, Linda Owen of Clyde Warren Park fame, and Larry and I. And in the last 2 years, we've put together really a comprehensive plan to really tackle this issue. And so why don't you go to the next slide. Who has a slide deck?
Peter.
Okay, Peter. So our purpose is to take this Dallas Integrated Circuit Trail Plan and to really see what we can do that has the highest and most impact in a short amount of time with the most bang for your buck in ROI. And what after studying it, what we determined is that this Dallas Integrated Circuit Plan is a fantastic plan. It just is very, very ambitious and has lots of holes in it and would take many, many, many years to complete. So we put together this Circuit Trail Conservancy to do two things, to connect our trails and to build connections and to build a system and to manage it and to run it and to put an organization in place in perpetuity to manage our trail system and to grow our trail system. So phase one is the loop, which is what you're going to see today, but we have every plan to have a sustainable, ongoing enterprise to grow our trail system and to complete this 130-mile Dallas Integrated Trail Circuit. So this is a report that the ULI put out last spring, and we couldn't have asked for something better than this. This was the active transportation is booming across the country. There's not a major city in America that isn't spending lots of time and energy and money building out their active transportation system. Why? Because it makes the city a better place. It makes it a more attractive place to live. It makes it better for businesses. It's an economic development engine, and there's case study after case study in this report, which I encourage you to read, which just shows how this is what the millennials want. It makes you more competitive as a city for labor, for businesses, for economic development. We've all been down to Austin. Downtown Austin, in my judgment, is what it is because of Lake Austin, Town Lake, and the trail system there. Larry Dale and I were down in Houston a couple weeks ago. We rode this Buffalo Bayou Trail. This is amazing. We all knew what the Buffalo Bayou was like 10 or 15 years ago, and it was horrible, and it was just a ditch that was derelict. And today it is like the Arboretum. It is beautiful. It's landscaped. Houston spent $100 million of their bond money to build a $220 million trail system and park. It's only 8 miles long. So to put this in perspective, our project is $43 million, and it's 50 miles long. So this is very well done, and hats off to Houston. As competitive as we are with our cities, this is a tremendous amenity, and we were down there. You just wouldn't believe the people using it. I have a friend of mine in Houston. He didn't even own a bike. He said now he rides his bike to work, on nice days. So it is a multimodal transportation engine that is a tremendous amenity for this city and hopefully our city in the future. You all might have seen this, and about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the front page of the New York Times had an article about Atlanta's Beltline Trail. And they're basically 9 years into a 25-year build-out. And basically, they've had $3 billion of economic development investment along the trail in preparation for that trail to be there. So, there's case study after case study of how much economic development happens around these trails. Okay, so as Willis mentioned, we do have a plan. Dallas was voted the worst cycling city in America 2 of the last 4 years. It was also voted the worst outdoor city in America. Now, we have a city, the core of which, 20 years ago, we had 6,000 residents in downtown and uptown. Today, we have 50,000. And in the next 5+ years, there'll be 100,000 residents downtown Dallas, which is fantastic. Our city is urbanizing around us. But these people have nowhere to go. And so next slide, Peter. So, we do have trails, and we are making connections. And the connections that we're making, especially in the Trinity, are great. This Trinity Skyline Trail is 4.5 miles long. It's incredibly frustrating because you see the potential of the Trinity and kind of activate the Trinity. And once this Texas Horseshoe Project is done next spring, the Corps of Engineers and Sarah will let the contract to basically go, you know, towards north and south. And so this Trinity will be engaged. And for the first time, you know, I've lived here almost 40 years, and, you know, I've never really spent any time in the Trinity. It's been a chasm for 100 years that separated the haves and have-nots and everybody else. And now we can activate this and make it something that's used as a huge amenity to our city. We're the fourth largest metropolitan area in the country, and we have this incredible amenity right next to downtown Dallas, and we're not using it. And this is a very, very cost-effective, efficient way to activate our Trinity River and to connect our city. Okay, so what is our plan? After studying this, building a trail system is like building a railroad. It's all about right-of-way, and it's all about easements. And what's incredibly time-consuming and expensive about a trail system is right-of-way and easements. The great thing about this project is it's 99.9% done. There's no cost or time that we need to spend on a going-forward basis to secure right-of-way and easements. And that's a tremendous advantage for us. So after further study, we said phase one of our plan needs to be connecting our core of our city. As you'll see, two-thirds of our plan is in South Dallas, south of downtown. And this will activate. We feel that we can go from worst to first. We can take this, our fragmented trail system, and by the way, I really appreciate the speakers being here that spoke on behalf of our trails. And we could have brought 100 of them today, and we knew there wasn't much room here. But I really appreciate, the people are talking about this, and this is becoming the buzz, and they're tremendously, everybody we talk to is just incredibly energized and excited about this plan. So here is our plan. We can build 10.5 miles of new trails, 10.5 miles of new trails to create a 50-plus mile loop. And as was mentioned a minute ago by one of our speakers, this is like Loop 12. And once you build this, then it's like a freeway system. Everyone's going to want to tie into it. It'll activate communities and public transportation and dark rail. And what this will do for Southern Dallas from an economic development standpoint is incredible. We're asking the city for bond money. By definition, a bond is an investment to create economic development, and that's exactly – there will be no greater ROI, return on investment, than to use these bond funds that are highly leveraged because of the private sector to activate our trail system and to create an incredible amenity for our city. So here's our plan. The first section, go ahead. The first section is the Trinity Forest Spine Trail. Most everybody, I believe, knows about this. This connects White Rock Lake down the Audubon Center and all of the East Dallas neighborhoods that have for such a long time wanted to have a trail system that they could activate and use. This is the answer. And go ahead, Peter. And, you know, this is beautiful. So you have this entire Trinity Forest, 90, it's the largest urban forest in America, the largest urban forest in America, and 95% of the people in Dallas have never been there because you can't get there. And you could be 5 miles away from downtown Dallas and feel like you're 100 miles away because it is the middle of nowhere. It's beautiful. It's Texas at its finest. The next portion is that inside the Trinity, there needs to be a link. There's that right there at Cedar Crest. There is a gap, and the Corps of Engineers, when this contract is let after the Horseshoe Project is done, there's a gap, and it's about a half a mile long. It's a wetlands area, and it's about a $2 million bridge that needs to go over that. And you really can't even use the Trinity because it's just an out-and-back trail. It doesn't connect until we have that bridge in place. So that's a very, very important component of it. The next component is what we call the Strand Skyline Gateway. This is activating This is getting over the levee. So this connects the Trinity Strand Trail to the Skyline Trail. And it will be done at the Baker Pump Station around Sylvan. Why don't you go to the next slide, Peter? Okay. So there's the Strand Trail on the bottom of the screen there, and that will be you can go right underneath Irving Boulevard and get over the levee, and you're in the Strand Trail. And you know what's for those of you who have been in the Trinity, you know that it's very hard to get to, and you got to cross major roads and intersections to get there. This is a dedicated hike and bike active transportation system. And so, you know, with very, very few exceptions, McComas at Central Expressway being one of them, everything is off-road. Okay. The next slide is the connector, and this connects the Katy Trail at Goat Hill to the Trinity River Strand Trail. Why don't you go to the next slide, Peter? There's a lot going on here. Most all of you have seen this before. But through the on-ramps and off-ramps of Stemmons to the tollway, the TRE rail line, Stemmons Park, which is, as you guys know, is in very, very bad shape and been neglected, and then getting across Stemmons is a difficult task. So if you go to the next slide, I mean, there's a lot going on here. We've studied this 10 different ways. And, Oak Lawn and Stemmons is a very, very busy intersection. You have off-ramps coming off of Stemmons, on-ramps, people accelerating, lots of cars, lots of rush hour traffic. And in our opinion, and you have some physical limitations due to height restrictions and infrastructure that are just don't make it easy. So we go to the next slide. So what we've done is we've broken this component down into three different components. You have the Goat Hill to Stemmons Park component of it, which is there. And, you know, there's a lot of topography there. There's a lot of engineering work that has to be done. Then you have Zone 2, which is the trailhead at Stemmons Park. This will become, talking about going from worst to first, this will be a highly activated trailhead. This park, you know, there's a homeless encampment there. There's all kinds of graffiti, and it's highly overgrown. It just isn't used. This is a trailhead, and this will be a significant component. And this park will be completely redone, and will be beautiful, and will have parking, as well as be a trailhead and have amenities and bike rentals and so forth. The third component is this bridge across Stemmons. Why don't you go to the next slide? Oh, sorry, go back one. Okay. And, you know, we've studied this a number of different ways. We believe going over Stemmons is the absolute safest, most secure, right way to do this. And that is what we're recommending. Go to the next slide. Okay. So how does the money work? The total hard and soft costs of our trail system are $43 million. This is amazing, okay? So we can build out a 50-mile-plus loop, and Houston paid $225 million for theirs. We can build ours out for $43 million. We have raised $23 million privately. We have pledges in hand, and those are from private sources as well as non-city sources. We're asking the city for $20 million. We want to partner with the city. And we are absolutely delighted to be here and tell you that you've asked us to create a public-private partnership. And we went to work, and the private sector has spoken. They're terribly excited about this. And we have gotten our matching funds, and we are looking forward to partner with the city. Go back one slide. So we have really broken this down into different components, as you'll see on the left side, and we're happy to review questions on this. The other component of it is through people that we hold in high regard that have done lots of green space investing. We were highly encouraged to increase our $43 million of total project costs by another $13 million for trail enhancements and to endow the trail system. Now, let me explain that. We all know the city will own the trail system, but and that they will provide their typical maintenance and security and so forth. We want to supplement what the city is providing and have another $8 million of endowment for security, for maintenance, for operations, and to make it a world-class trail system. And so that will all be privately raised. So the total cost of this is $56 million. We're asking the city for $20 million. Next slide. So the North Texas Council of Governments loves the project. They love the connector. And they want to do $8 million for the connector as part of our plan. The county has matching funds for the spine trail, and those commissioners have been outstanding to work with. So as you can see by our list of supporters, we commenced our capital campaign in May, and you know we've basically gotten all of this done in the last 5.5 months. So the city, the private sector has spoken. They really, really want this to get done. Next slide. So why is this important? So I'm a real estate guy. I've been representing large tenants and companies in this marketplace for 35 years. And I'm in the room when a lot of these decisions are made as to where to locate. This makes Dallas a much more competitive city. When Dallas is competing with the bedroom communities that we have, and we've all seen the incredible amount of development that's happening in our bedroom communities at the expense of Dallas oftentimes. And as Dallas is trying to recruit and keep people here and keep them in our central business district and in our communities, this makes Dallas a much better place. It is a huge amenity for our city. It is a legacy asset that is a Clyde Warren Park type asset for a city that will pay huge dividends. Leverage. So we're getting basically 64% of the project is non-city funded. 99% plus percent of this, the right-of-way is secured. What we're really adding is 10.5 miles of trails to get 50, but not just get 50, and to establish an organization that will basically grow our trail system. Once we have this loop completed, we're going to build out the rest of Willis's plan. And you'll have all these people around, I mean, all these areas around Dallas going to say, we want to tie into the loop. And you'll have all kinds of feeder trails that will tie into the loop and get on this active transportation system. And it will be an economic development engine for our city. There's lots of study that the ROI, the return on investment for a trail system, is oftentimes 50-1. That's incredible. I mean, you know, as difficult it is in a mature city, I mean, in a established city, to grow economic development and to grow your tax base, this is, in our opinion, the easiest way to do it, and we think we can have this project done in 3 to 4 years after the bond program. 3 to 4 years. This is not a 50-year project. And as we say here, it benefits everybody. It's free. It's an asset and an amenity to everybody, and it makes our city a better place to live. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There's a couple of folks that – well, actually, not a couple, no more. But Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Mr. Ellman, thank you so much for bringing us this presentation. I've been asking you and other members of the community for a long time to do this, and it's really heartening to see the success you've had in raising the money. I couldn't be more happy about this. You and the county, you know, Clay Jenkins and Joseph Pitchford and I are all in a weekend bike group, and we had exactly the same experience you did. You come to the end of a beautiful trail, and it leads to nothing. You know, currently the Katy Trail dumps you out on Houston on a sidewalk going against traffic. We've done what we could do in this town in terms of trying to develop trails in fits and starts, and it just leaving them disconnected has left us really having spent a lot of money for less value than we really could have achieved with it if we'd concentrated more heavily on connections, and I think it's the time to do that. A quick word about the COG. The last three projects I've heard of the COG taking a look at and really buying into are a pedestrian safety project on Mockingbird, an air quality project that's region-wide, and the Loop. I don't know how to say enough nice things about the North Central Texas Council of Governments at this point. That's just amazing. I mean, a few years ago, I just don't think those projects would have gotten nearly the same traction. We should also remember that DMPT Wilson is a huge proponent of this project. It benefits Southern Dallas. It benefits his district, but he also sees how much it benefits the city as a whole. So he's not here this morning, but we really appreciate his help as well. One thing that I think is valuable to look at in terms of comparing this to what Houston did on Buffalo Bayou is the cost-benefit analysis. I think in some ways Houston kind of did it wrong. They did a full boat investment in all the amenities and everything else, but got a fairly short section of trail. And to me, it seems like the $53 million that we're proposing to spend here, or 56, I forget what you said, gets us quite a bit more than what Houston got. What we know is that bikers will bike just about anywhere. I bike on surface streets all the time, and it's scary. It's super scary, and what that means is that people who haven't started biking will not start biking. So these protected facilities, I think, are just critical to growing cycling in Dallas. And in addition to all of the great data you brought us concerning the real estate benefits, we've seen, you know, as much as 25 or 40% value increases for properties along Katy Trail.
$1 billion.
Yeah. The benefits to people can't be really overstated. I often hear people say people in Dallas just won't bike, and that is mind-bendingly false. Dallas some years has over 200 days of bikeable weather. We all, you know, in August it's hard to remember why we live here, but in February you always catch at least one day where you're like, oh my goodness, you know, God loves us and gave us perfect weather. And so I've spent time this summer in Chicago, Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, several places that have far more inclement weather than Dallas, who maybe have, if they're lucky, have 125 bikeable days a year. And when the weather's nice, because they've built the facilities, they have almost 10% commuting by bike. That's insane. You know, if we had that, the amount of carbon we're taking out of our air, the amount of VOCs that aren't coming out of tailpipes, and the amount of exercise we're getting, the public health benefit it hasn't been well studied so far, but I can't imagine that it is less than really miraculous. So I'm truly happy about that. I think your point about activating the Trinity is really valuable. What we've seen is that the Trinity Skyline Trail that the mayor and Mr. Griggs and Angela Hunt put in the last bond package has been a truly transformative feature for the northern end of the floodway. And if you haven't been down there, it's a great ride. It's a lot of fun. It's going to get better as soon as TxDOT finishes its construction and gets out of the way. But it has people down in the Trinity enjoying the Trinity. The other thing that we've learned, these trails are flood hardy. You know? They get inundated, they get silted over, you brush them off, and you bike down the trail. They're not huge maintenance drags on Willis's budget, and they really, really work. So I really think that this represents a value proposition that the city cannot afford to pass up. I'll be supporting it with all the enthusiasm I have. I think that this, frankly, is, in terms of the amount we're proposing to spend, so on a dollar-for-dollar basis, this is the most exciting thing we're talking about doing in the 2017 bond package. And I can't thank you enough for your work on it. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Can I say one thing?
So please.
What I forgot to mention was that, you know, what we're really proposing here is a system. It's not, you know, four different trail connections. It's a system. And the entire system needs to be built out, and that entire system we're asking the city for $20 million. It's not $8 million for this and $5 million for that. It's a system of $20 million.
Thank you. And the trails are cleaned by the Trinity Watershed Management. Thank you very much. And there's no other questions. We'll go on to our next briefing. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Madam Mayor. Sorry, I thought others were ahead of me.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, I thought others were waiting to speak.
No, sir, you were the only one.
Yeah, I just wanted to make some general comments, you know. Thank you all for the briefing.
No,
I appreciate you being here. Obviously very important to the future of our city, and there's no doubt, you know, that there's widespread support, you know, for the Loop Circuit Trail. I do have some observations, however, though, and we're our area, as I've said before, is basically the last area to close the loop. You know, we've been waiting and we've been excited about that possibility and was hoping that, you know, we'd have a lot of private money to be able to do that. But, you know, the challenge I have with this thing is, and I love the idea, there's nothing wrong with it, and I have certainly a very important part of that over in the eastern part of town. But at the very moment that we're advocating for streets and other infrastructure improvements and, you know, high-profile park improvements and other things like that, you know, we've waited for these things for such a long time. They seem to be coinciding with our bond campaign, and that's the challenging part. We've only got so much money, and we've collectively on the council decided that rather than $1.1 billion of capital bond money, we wanted to dial that back to $800 million. Others on the council wanted to go even lower. Even the mayor said, Paul's time out. Let's wait till November or wait a year. So we have all those forces moving against us, and, you know, there's a desire to extend Clyde Warren downtown. There's a desire to build the downtown parks program. There's a desire to build a deck park in Oak Cliff. So what you're hearing, the money all stacks up, and when it adds all up together, then the more that we do on these high-profile signature projects, it has a tendency to dilute from other 14 districts. Yeah, some districts are going to be the beneficiaries of those things, but that's the challenge that I have. The more that we feed either downtown or this extracurricular trail network, then that means my guys, my district, District 5, we've waited 17 years for roads and streets and alleys and sidewalks and those kind of improvements. And, again, I was getting a briefing on this yesterday, and I was hoping that I was going to get a much larger share of the pie. And now, because of all this external otherwise spending outside of District 5, I started watching my potential to have bond improvements shrinking. And I hope everybody sees that. You know, we have the tough challenge as elected officials of making these tough calls. It would be so easy to jump on board and just check the box and said, man, that's great. That's an economic development stimulus. And that's easy for me to say because I'm the economic development chair. But, again, at what cost? And some of this that I'm saying is somewhat rhetorical because we've got to make up our minds, you know, what is the most important thing. And you mentioned about economic development, and at first glance, and in some areas of downtown, you can see that. You can see that there'll be high-rises, restaurants, hotels, et cetera. But when I look in my district, it's predominantly in a floodplain behind the rail networks. It's in an area where the connecting points, when it comes out to the street, in other words, there's very little land to develop economically. And a lot of that is already owned by the city or the Parks Department or you bump into the tree ordinance or ISWIM requirements, which means developers have very limited opportunities to develop. So is it myth or reality? Are we really going to have some affected economic development, or is that just all talk? Again, a rhetorical question. Most of the things that we're trying to do all make sense, universally across the city. The big picture, and Willis, you've done a great job of helping us see that big picture. We want to see a Grand Dallas. We want to see Fair Park flourish. We want to see downtown continue this metamorphosis that it's undergone. But we've just got to also take care of the things that are important to us. I've got the worst streets by grade in the entire city, and I haven't had anything in 17 years. So I don't know how long that we've got to wait. So I guess my closing questions to the entire group is, will Dallas fix what it already owns? We talk a good line about that. Yeah, we need to do that. Will we take care of our priorities? And will we fix our most important assets? Are we going to keep throwing dirt and spending more, which diminishes our ability to repair the things that are most important to us? So those are the challenges. And I haven't decided, I don't want you to walk away and say that, oh, Callahan's opposed to it. I can't believe that. But we've got to find a way to take care of the things that are most important. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. We'll go on to our next briefing, the Downtown Parks update. Thanks. Mr. Gonzalez, please.
Thank you, gentlemen. Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor and Council. As I mentioned, Willis will go ahead and deliver that presentation now.
Good morning again. So our second briefing this morning is to provide the Council with an update on our Downtown Parks Master Plan. This is a briefing that has been presented to the Park Board over the past year, just giving them an update on and an overview of our downtown parks. The parks that are going to be part of this update are listed here on page 2, Carpenter, Pacific Plaza, Hartwood Park, and West End Plaza, and then we'll close with the next steps as we proceed forward. So by way of background, on page 3, the 2004 Downtown Park Master Plan was originally created in partnership with the Belo Foundation, which became Parks for Downtown Dallas. We have been working since 2013 when this original 2004 plan was updated in response to the growing downtown residential population, the commercial development, which resulted in a loss of potential park sites that were identified originally in the 2004 master plan, and to also always support a vibrant downtown Dallas. So the 2013 update identified four priority parks for the city to work on over the next 10 years. These four parks I've already mentioned, and this program builds on the existing system of downtown parks that was a product of a success of the original 2004 master plan, when we were able to build, buy land and build Main Street Garden, buy land and partner with the Belo Foundation to build Belo Garden, partnering with the Woodrow Rogers Park Foundation on Clyde Warren Park in another great public-private partnership and shared funding plan, to redevelop Dealey Plaza with bond funding for the 50th anniversary in 2013, and then finally we're currently working on a plan to revitalize Pioneer Plaza, Pioneer Cemetery, and City Hall Plaza also. So those parks are identified on the screen, and you can see the dark red colors are the three results of the original bond funding in 2003 and 2006, and then the four parks, West End Plaza on the left, Pacific, Carpenter, and then the new park, Harwood Park, are what we're currently working on. And this this site plan here of downtown shows a truly great downtown park system. There are very few cities and urban centers in America that have that can boast the development and investment in its downtown core with public green space. So the parks, again, are illustrated on this drawing on page 5. You can see the existing parks are sort of listed in the light green triangles of different sites around the city, and then the ones that we're currently working on, again, West End, Pacific, Carpenter, and Harwood. So I'll go through each of these four parks now in a little more detail for you. Starting on the east side of downtown with Carpenter Park, this is an 8.8-acre park site. The department owns the entire site. We are currently working in the design development phase, again funded through Generosity Parks for Downtown Dallas. We have removed, and that site was is going through a major reconfiguration right now, with streets being realigned around the periphery, internal streets being removed. The portal slice sculpture by Robert Irwin has now been removed, and we have been working with Mr. Irwin to reconfigure the portal slice and reinstall it when the time is right. The pieces are now in storage at a park facility in East Dallas. The design development phase will be completed at the end of this year. The estimated cost of all the work that has been done to date, schematic design, design development, and the actual removal of the sculpture and putting it in storage is just under $1 million, all funded through Parks for Downtown Dallas. The park board has reviewed the project development at various points, most recently in November of last year, about a year ago. And then we had an agreement for the design development phase that was briefed and approved to the park board and city council, approved by both entities late last year. And we also had public input meetings on the design of the park. So this is a quick project overview. I'm not going to go through this except just the most pertinent facts. Again, the size, 8.8 acres. This will be the largest park in downtown Dallas. Whereas before, it was chopped up into about five different parcels that were basically green space but unusable for public recreation. The estimated cost is $20 million. It'll take just under 2 years to build. And the landscape architect that we've been working with to design this park created the original downtown park master plan in 2004, the Fair Park Comprehensive Development Plan, and also designed Velo Garden. We're working with Hargraves Associates on this. This is an aerial site plan of the site, showing again the streets that previously chopped the site up into three parcels on the main portion have all been removed. They all have physically been removed now, but we're going to get a much larger contiguous parcel that will be, I think, serve the eastern side of downtown very well. This will act as a link between downtown Dallas and old East Dallas to the east, or upper Deep Ellum. And the site consists of, and I'll go to a pointer here, and I'll go back and forth to the screen so you don't have to turn around, but basically the straight line that's shown here is the reconfigured portal slice that used to go through the site like this. So we've taken all the pieces out. They're in storage now, and it'll be reconfigured. And Robert Irwin, the sculptor, is working on new components of this sculpture. So this will be a major piece of modern art that will be reinstalled at this downtown park. I-345 overhead is shown in a dashed line. You can see that under portions of the freeway, we're utilizing for a food court plaza with food trucks that will align here on the North Central Expressway. We're also putting court games under the eastern half of the overhead with basketball courts, a skate park, our city's first downtown skate park, and also off-leash dog parks down here off of Swiss Avenue. The main section of the site, again, will have a recreated mound that will facilitate reinstallation of portal slice, a meandering walkway, fountain plaza, public fountain, gardens, a lot of trees. So those are sort of the components of this section of the park. It is located again just south of Crozier Tech, which is undergoing redevelopment by Matthews Southwest, adjacent to the Sheraton Hotel, with a lot of opportunities for surrounding development. So that's Carpenter Plaza Park, a quick overview. Pacific Plaza is a 3.4-acre site, also land that's currently owned by the Park Department in conjunction with Aston Park. And the proposed closure of Live Oak Street. That will total 3.4 acres, and I'll show that to you on a map in a moment. The land was purchased with funding from the 2003 bond program, 2006, $9.1 million. We were able to partner with the Trust for Public Land, who stepped in and purchased some of the land and held it for us until our bonds sold between 2005 and 2008. We were able to buy the land back from the trust, so that was a great partnership there. Parks for Downtown Dallas, again, like they have on Carpenter Plaza, has funded the schematic design. They've also funded a traffic closure study for Live Oak Street, and surveys and all the other analysis portion of schematic design for a total of $476,000. We completed schematic design in October of this year. Board has been briefed on this several times, dating back to 2014, including the issues and questions of a parking garage. There have been three very exciting public input meetings held starting in March. Two were held on March 29th, one during the at lunch hour for downtown workers, the other one at night for downtown residents, and then we had a follow-up meeting in September to unveil the design. We've also have recently had a proposal for both a park and a parking garage development that was briefed to the City Council Economic Development Committee in October and to the Park and Recreation Board also in October. So the project overview for Pacific Plaza, again, 3.4 acres of land. The estimated construction cost is $15 million, and the landscape architect is SWA. On the rendering, that which is the completed schematic design prepared by SWA, and again, this had extensive programming input from downtown residents and workers, input from downtown our good partner at Downtown Dallas, Inc., and that was briefed to the public in October. So this is the final schematic design that shows a lot of green space in the center of the park, generous pedestrian sidewalks around the perimeter, emphasizing a pedestrian promenade at the upper part of the screen along Harwood Street that would connect Clyde Warren Park to the north with the Farmers Market by Harwood Park to the south. So very extensive pedestrian promenade there, a kind of a sculptural shade structure hovering and cantilevering over the sidewalk in the corner of St. Paul and Live Oak Street on the right side of the screen. Lighting, play areas, off-leash dog parks, and extensive trees and horticultural display gardens throughout the site. Just to the left of the screen is the One Dallas Center, so this is a very complimentary development there. John Kirtland is redeveloping the El Corrigan Tower just off to the right of the screen. The Sheraton Dallas is across and their parking garage and conference center is across the top of the screen. At the bottom of the screen, offside, is the Republic Center. So that gives you an orientation. And then finally, I want to point out Live Oak Street, which currently comes through the site from the top of the screen to the lower right, bisecting the site in this fashion. So the triangular piece here is Aston Park. This is the current parking lot that we own at Pacific Plaza. So the parking lot, the street right-of-way for Live Oak and Aston Park is what comprises the 3.4 acres of land. The next park is Harwood Park. This is a 3.8-acre site. Our partners at Parks for Downtown Dallas has acquired privately 85% of the site at an approximate cost of $11 million. We have worked to select with them to select Ten Eyck as a landscape architect. We also have a very important preservation architecture component of this project team. Dallas preservation architect Quimby McCoy has been very involved because we have six buildings on this site, some of which are in the Harwood Historic District. Others are in the Downtown National Register District. Parks for Downtown Dallas has funded the conceptual design at a cost of $235,000. That work was completed in May. And it was presented to the Park Board in a preliminary conceptual design was presented to the board in February. We had a public input meeting on April 21st that went very well. And then at the bottom of the screen, We are now in the position to move forward with the official schematic design for this project based on the decision, DART board decision, that the D2 line would be underground and not be bisecting the site or impacting the site to the north or to the south. And I'll come back to that and show you what the impact could have been in just a moment. Now we'll move over to the project overview page. Again, 3.8 acres, so larger than Pacific Plaza, smaller than Clyde Warren Park, which is 5.2 acres. 90% of the land, again, is owned, has been purchased, and currently under the ownership of Parks for Downtown Dallas and the Deckard Foundation. As I mentioned, some of the buildings are in the Harwood Historic District, so we have a preservation issues that we need to address. And that's what makes these buildings or what makes this site very distinctive and different from any of the other park sites in downtown. It's one of the most, I think it's going to create one of the most imaginative urban spaces of any park in the United States. Both a combination, the result of the combination of the size of the site, room for large lawns and gathering spaces, sporting activities and games. There will be a large children's play area, and other functional spaces. The estimated land acquisition cost is about $14 million, and the estimated construction cost is $19 million. The next slide shows you the proposed conceptual design for the park, and I'm going to point again to both screens to just show you where this park sits. So Harwood Street on the left-hand side, Young Street, Pearl Expressway, and Jackson Street on the north. What you don't see here going through the center of the site is Wood Street. So there's a proposal here to abandon Wood Street that bisects the site in the center. You can see, again, Jackson, Pearl, Young, and Harwood. First Presbyterian Church sits here on the corner. Lone Star Gas on the left side. The currently undergoing redevelopment of Statler Hilton and the old Dallas Public Library is on the upper left off the screen. So, again, on this side, First Presbyterian, Lone Star Gas, and Statler Hilton, Dallas Public Library. The Harwood, the Farmers Market District is across Young Street along with the Scottish Rite Cathedral. So what you see here is when this conceptual design was prepared, there was an assumption at the time that the D2 line would be along Jackson Street to the north. So this design recognizes the potential negative impact of a light rail station there by basically we were building a sound barrier and a visual wall along that the north side of the site. With the decision to put the D2 line underground, this site plan will be reconfigured to readdress the possibilities of a pedestrian streetscape along Jackson Street and the proposed development across the street. So the wall will be coming out, and this will be we'll take another look at this. But the elements of the site include a stage and seating lawn area. The buildings are shown in gray and white around the perimeter, including the ones that are owned by Parks for Downtown Dallas. You can see a lot of great exterior spaces of various sizes and capacities, a very generous lawn area, and a lot of trees and planting and water as well. So that's an overview of Harwood. And then the final and fourth and final piece of the Downtown Park Master Plan update is a proposal for a 3/4 acre park in that we call the West End Plaza. We currently do not own the land. I'll show you on a map in a moment. It's basically the parking lot, the surface parking lot, just south of the spaghetti warehouse, if you can picture that. And I'll come back to it on the plan. So, again, this site was originally designated in the 2004 Downtown Park Master Plan. It was reconfirmed in the 2013 update. And the City of Dallas put in the 2006 bond program $4.6 million in funding in the transportation proposition to purchase this land for a plaza in downtown Dallas. Parks for Downtown Dallas has committed to contributing additional funds, if necessary, for land acquisition costs. This site, which I'll show you in the map, is strongly favored and endorsed by the West End Business Association, DDI and the Dallas Innovation Alliance, which is has a strong presence in the West End. Parks for Downtown Dallas is committed to funding the schematic design after we buy the land. Project overview very quickly. Again, three quarters of an acre site. This is the smallest of the four sites downtown. Estimated land acquisition cost will probably be north of $5 million. The estimated construction cost is $8 to $10 million. And then this next slide shows the master plan, the actual site drawing from our downtown park master plan update in 2013. So I'll go to both screens. The first, I want to show you Spaghetti Warehouse and the redevelopment Factory 683 is the current name for this project. New apartment buildings have been built across the street, historic office buildings around the perimeter. This is the current surface parking lot that's proposed for a multi-purpose, multi-use plaza. So our next steps are after the briefing today. As many of you are aware, Parks for Downtown Dallas has committed, this screen says $35 million in match funding for the 2017 bond program, but that amount has been increased now to $44 million. So they have $44 million in land and cash and are committed to working with the City of Dallas for a $35 million commitment in the bond program to develop these four park sites over the next 4 to 5 years. They will also are committed to working with private donors to raise additional funds for long-term capital improvements, endowment for long-term improvements and major maintenance and repairs. Madam Mayor, that completes the briefing, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Willis. Good seeing you. Just a quick question on the plaza presentation. If my understanding correct is there's not any request of city funds on that?
For
the plaza?
For Pacific Plaza?
Yeah, Pacific Plaza, I'm sorry.
Well, yes, there's the match funds for that have been put on in place by Parks for Downtown Dallas of $44 million is for to cover all four parks, a request from the city for $35 million to match their $44 million to develop all four of the parks.
Well, I'm asking about that one specific. I'm on the Economic Development Committee, and when we were briefed, that was my understanding. If that's changed, then and we were briefed on that particular one individually.
The funding is still the funding request is still in place for Pacific Plaza.
Okay, so I assume what we were explaining then is a little bit different than what you're telling me now, because that.
When we briefed economic development, Parks for Downtown Dallas has requested $35 million from the city to be matched at the time by an equal amount from them to develop all four of the parks.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll just talk with somebody offline because what I'm hearing is something different than what I was told. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Willis, good presentation. This has been in the works for quite a while, and you and I both have spent a lot of time with Parks for Downtown Dallas and Robert Deckard on this. This really is in the same nature as what we're doing with regard to the Loop Trail, with regard to our new attitude toward an underground alignment for D2. It's planning for the demand that already is knocking on our door in the urban core. There are thousands of people living around these park sites already. And there is a crying need. I was glad to see this in the presentation. People in downtown and the surrounding neighborhoods are just crying out for sports recreation facilities. And I am so glad to see the Park Department sort of refocus on sports recreation. I think we absolutely need it. It is completely compatible with other recreational uses of parks. I don't think it's negative at all. And the idea that Dallas is the largest major city in the United States without a skate park is really, I mean, it's time for us to catch up on that. That's just fantastic. One thing I wanted to ask you about, I think I know the answer to this, but the Carpenter plan, if we choose to remove I-345 and replace it with a surface boulevard, which is something I really hope that we do, how does that affect the plan?
Well, we designed this park with that in that potentially in the future could happen, and so if the boulevards generally follow what's happening at the street level today, it's hard to say where exactly the streets will end up. I think the plan can easily accommodate that and can be, if there needs to be some reconfiguration to address new streets and divided boulevards, I think it easily can. Most of the investment is going to be on the western half of the site where the green is, but I think if I-345 comes down, it's easy to reconfigure and redesign anything that happens on the east end of the site.
And are you proposing a thoroughfare plan amendment for that section of Pearl next to the park?
That has been proposed to go from a 6-lane to a 4-lane that's shown on this plan. Yes, sir.
And have you either seen or been briefed on the Arts District, Inc.'s request for bond funding for the new master plan for the Arts District?
I'm aware of what they're asking. Yes,
have you seen how they want to shrink Pearl from, I believe that already has been through Transportation Committee at CPC?
Yes.
So do you remember when we changed the dimensional classification of Pearl to move it up to 6 lanes?
I do not have that information.
I'm pretty sure it was in mid-2000s. So it's amazing to me. I just wanted to point out, it's not really a parks issue, but it's amazing to me how quickly this city has reversed course on how we treat downtown surface streets, and we're trying to turn them into streets that complement our parks and complement our arts district instead of places where we go as fast as possible.
And, Mr. Kingston, that's been a big piece of this, to make these pedestrian-friendly streets so that people can cross the street, for example, cross Pearl along Pacific or along Live Oak without taking their life into their hands. We've also, on these plans, taken out the double right-hand turn lanes that allow for continuous traffic movement. For example, from westbound Pacific to northbound Pearl, there are two traffic turn lanes there that are taken out on this plan and also on Live Oak. So that's part of the overall, that's a very important component of the design of these parks that we haven't really talked about or share with anyone, but it's critical to the success is how people get to these parks safely.
I'm very happy to see it. I think that's fantastic. Can we look at your slide for Pacific Plaza? Let's look at the rendering, if you don't mind. So this is not the plan that was briefed to economic development, correct? Or do you even know what was briefed to you?
No, sir, it was not.
Okay. Tell me how the plan differs from what was briefed to economic development.
Well, there was the plan that was briefed basically included an underground parking garage under the current surface lot. It did call for the closure of Live Oak Street, and then there was a retail, I've also seen it referred to as a grocery store component that was sort of on Live Oak in this general area of the site.
And that retail component was above ground, correct?
Yes, sir.
What is the Park Board's current directive to potential developers regarding above ground development on Pacific Plaza?
The Park Board in 2014 has taken a strong stand against above-ground parking garages, specifically garages, and have not addressed the issue of any other type of building.
Who acquired this land for the city?
We partnered with the Trust for Public Land. Again, when our bonds were approved by the voters, they were scheduled to, not to be sold for 3 or 4 years, so the trust stepped in, purchased the land, held it in our for us until we could buy it back from them.
Has the trust weighed in on which plan it prefers?
Yes, sir, they have.
And what have they said?
They have provided a letter to members of the City Council and Park Board advocating for the development that you see on the screen here without an underground parking garage.
And if we were to offend the Trust for Public Land, how would you estimate the total amount of money that the city could lose in the future for a park acquisition?
That's difficult to put my hands on.
It's
that
a non-zero
kind of
number, right?
Correct.
In fact, they've proposed to help us acquire land all over the city to build out a master plan for parks, correct?
Yes, sir. We're working with them, have been for the last year, on the Smart Growth for Dallas program, which identifies parkland to purchase in the future.
Would you like to have them as a partner or an enemy?
They are a great partner, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you. Let's just look at West End real quick. I don't know to what extent people are aware of what's going on in West End. There's been substantial investment in West End. Developers, very smart developers, including Crescent, Joseph Pitchford's sitting in the audience here, has acquired quite a bit of square footage there, and I think we've seen commercial rents up by over what I understand over $5 a foot just in the last couple of years. This is an area of town that is historic and presents challenges because of the need to do historic preservation, and it really, really needs a park. We got a lot of people who've lived for a lot of years in West End with basically no recreational amenities. So I'm thrilled to see this still on the plan, and I'll look forward to enthusiastically supporting this downtown parks plan. Thank you very much,
thank
Mr. Winters. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Willis, for this presentation. I'm excited to have been part of the early stages of this plan when we developed Main Street Garden and we developed Belo Garden. I know my colleagues, also Ms. Young and Ms. Alonzo, were on the park board at the time when those develops were going on, so I think that's really important. These next set of parks continue to provide great green space in downtown, and I'm excited about them well, and of course, how can you look away from the fact that that someone has actually stepped up and put some match money into this? I think that's really important. I do have a specific question, and I don't know if you can answer it or someone from Streets can answer it, but what the heck is going on with Cesar Chavez? Ever since I've been on this council, that thing has been under construction, and we're not going to get even to Carpenter Park till we get that finished. So any updates on that? Staff maybe help me with that. It's been the slowest of many slow projects in the city.
Many challenges, Jill.
Yes, it has been a slow process. So at this point, everything is going forward. We've gotten through our last round of issues, which was how to get the huge water line through all of the underground utilities. So that was our most recent slow up. So at this point, we're not seeing any obstacles, but this is a snake bit project.
And do we have an idea? Could you get back to me?
I'll get back to you.
Okay, great. Because clearly we can't get Carpenter done until that's done. The other thing I do want to express some concern about is are all these projects listed as citywide projects in the bond program, or are they district projects?
Well, currently they're being carried as in the matching funds category, which is generally citywide projects. Yes, sir.
All right. And then the previous parks that we developed in downtown, were those listed as citywide projects also?
They were.
So, and then outside of the core, how many citywide projects do you guys have on asking for the bond program?
Well, those would be our major destination projects and our signature parks. So Bachman, White Rock Lake, Keast, Crawford Memorial, Dallas Zoo, Dallas Arboretum, Turtle Creek Corridors, okay. Also considered.
Those all have just as high a priority in your request for bond money as these citywide.
they are in the same category, but the park board has, through a survey, has indicated which projects are higher priority than others.
So here's my point and my concern is some of these parks, like, I mean, I see where Clyde Warren, it's a destination park. I don't see where Main Street Garden or where Belo Gardens, a destination park. Those serve neighborhoods. I think that many of these items that you're asking for really serve districts specifically, and this continuous concentration on calling something that serves downtown a citywide project really does a disservice to the other neighborhoods that we need neighborhood parks in the other districts. So I would like to see maybe a list of really, you know, or maybe we can help you think about what is a citywide or not, because I think there are several other destination parks that are not in the citywide category. For example, Crawford Memorial Park, it's been a signature park listed for a long time, but indeed it's not getting citywide attention. The Southern Gateway Public Green, we've gotten a huge amount of funding from the COG on that, yet it's still not really considered that it's a citywide need, even though it's right in front of the zoo, which is considered a citywide park. And, of course, you know, up in North Dallas, we have an incredible lack of green space. There's the Midtown Commons, which the Trust for Public Land has identified as one of the key elements to bringing green space into our city. So I think is with regards to equity, it's challenging for me as a council member to continue to fund downtown parks when other parks in our neighborhoods are not getting funded because these parks are being classified as citywide. With that in mind, approximately how many dollars of match funding, solid, real money, do you think you have available to the Parks Department right now?
Well, we have what has been requested of the city is approximately $185 million in city match funding that will leverage over $220 in private or non-city funding.
And the private funding is what you would consider more solid than just a promise we'll raise the money. I mean, money in the bank or
It spans the gamut of we're committed to undertake a capital campaign,
right,
to pledges in hand as the Circuit Trail Conservancy,
right,
has, to other governmental funding secured, which is the COG and the Dallas County funds, to cash in the bank, which is Parks for Downtown Dallas. That's the total range of commitments.
And so in the category of pretty significantly secure, money in the bank, a commitment from the COG, a credible fundraising organization that do you think half or three-quarters of that money?
Do we have three-quarters? We probably do,
right.
Mr. Kleinman. I can get you the list. The other thing that I didn't mention are, for example, Arboretum and Zoo, mm-hmm, that have already undertaken and funded projects that are currently under construction,
right,
that they feel is a match for requested funds.
So that brings up with the real challenges for us as council members. Not all projects have the ability to raise capital that way. So maybe it's incumbent upon us to use our ability as council members to raise capital, which is issue bonds, to do that to fund the items that can't raise outside money. That would be an argument. The other argument is don't look a gift horse in the mouth, which, you know, if somebody's offering you money, take it and match it. I'm honestly struggling with that, Willis, and I'm trying to figure out where the balance is in all that. The matches that you have lined up are incredible. They really, really are. The fact that staff is recommending, I had a meeting yesterday, about $50 million in the bond program for parks is it's almost unbelievable. I mean, it's not only that we wouldn't even come up to take advantage of the full match, but it's the idea that we're going to spend so much money on deferred maintenance, fixing stuff that we should have been fixing along the way, as opposed to investing in our community, which I do believe parks are an investment in our community. It's something we didn't have. It makes our community more valuable by putting a new park on the ground. These and many others. I'm not against these. I just would like to see this more spread around. We need to make some fundamental decisions around here as to what we think, how we're going to spend this money. And I know there's been a big call for streets, but the reality of it in my mind is streets are consumables. We should be paying for that out of the general fund. We got to figure out how to do that. We've started that by the fund, the streets fund that we're getting from, I think, sanitation and water. But just paying for deferred maintenance, issuing a 20-year bond for something that's going to last 10 years or 15 years, like a street or a roof, that just puts us into debtor's prison. You know, we're always paying for that. So my overall view is, you know, I like parks. I think we ought to increase the amount of bond money going to parks. That obviously is going to have to be at the expense of other items because we only have so much in the bond package. But I do believe that parks are a good investment in the community. I believe things like streets are consumable, and we ought to figure out how to do that out of the general fund. But thank you for this. Your work has been stellar here long before you became director. It's such a great vision for our city. It's a great vision for downtown and has been. You've been very focused on that, and I appreciate that. But I'd also like to see it extend into other, you know, out beyond just the core, because the core is really going now. I mean, we've done what we need to do economically, parks-wise, transportation-wise. I'm not saying we're done with the core. There's tons that needs to be done in the core, but the core is starting to get a life of its own. It's starting to be self-stimulating, and it's starting to be sustainable on its own. So, you know, putting more park money into the core, more TIF money into the core, more economic development money into the core, I'm saying we need to really think about whether we want to kind of go into this next ring of investment in our community that's not necessarily the core, and that's kind of where my direction's going, and that's why I'm really concerned about calling some of these parks, you know, citywide. I mean, less than an acre park on West End Plaza, that doesn't sound like a destination park to me. At any rate, thank you for your help on this, and we've got a lot of resolve around this horseshoe. Thank you.
Veronica?
No, I was waiting by the time you go off. Just kidding. Ms. Arnold?
Yes, I really thank you. I appreciate your comments, Mr. Kleiman. You have me a little bit confused, but I think I like the last comment you made about the parks and the priorities, because as we continue to speak for our constituents, before I make a statement about the issue on the monitor, each one of the council members has the responsibility of representing the issues of their constituents, and my constituents are still perplexed as to why the destination status that you are trying to give to the proposed Southern Gateway, when their desire is to have infrastructure in that area, Mr. Kleiman, with streets and alleys. And for me to take an argument to them that they're not the core and it's not a priority would cause me to have some serious problems. So when we talk about spending, for me, clarification, first of all, are there any of the representatives here for the proposed parks?
For the downtown parks?
Yes, sir. Do you have the developers here? Of the proposal.
Amy Meadows is president of Parks for Downtown Dallas is here.
Well, I mean, it would be helpful for me to just see, and perhaps the public, when you said the downtown parks, I'm speaking primarily each individual park. Does she represent all of those parks?
Well, she represents our partner at Parks for Downtown Dallas, has been working with the city since about 2002 on implementing the original master plan and now the master plan update, and would be the funding partner on these four parks. We can certainly, there are constituents associated with each park that aren't represented here today.
Okay, that's, I think, with what my constituents are asking me when we talk about the parks, on the Pacific Plaza in particular, is this where the unsolicited proposal has come this morning that was not submitted to us in the economic development presentation?
That the proposal was briefed to economic development.
The one that we spoke about that was unsolicited?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, so how did it get here today? Who reached out to this group to put it before us today?
I don't think I understand your question.
Kingston was asking a question about an unsolicited proposal?
Yes, that was a proposal from 4P Partners, a development group, who proposed to build an underground parking garage at Pacific Plaza. That proposal was briefed to economic development. They're not part of this briefing today, except other than that one bullet point at the bottom of here on page 9. Just wanted to let the council know that proposal, while not part of the master plan update, was presented to both the Park Board and the Council Economic Development Committee. Just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention.
All right, so I think probably what I'm getting confused on is what the underground, I think Mr. Kingston mentioned something about the position being taken against parking garages.
Above ground parking garages. Yeah. So the board in 2014 indicated that they did not want to consider any proposal for an above-ground garage.
Because of what?
Because it displaces public green space. It's an urban blight. It's just an undesirable development in downtown Dallas for a large urban, a large above-ground garage on what could be public green space.
All right, so the question is, in part of my reading, was there which one of these proposals was basically not asking for any support through the bond package? It was basically going to be a gift, if you will. Which one was that?
The proposal from 4P Partners was to build a park at their expense on top of an underground garage. So no impact on the bond program.
So basically, what does that translate for our constituents? What is it? They need to hear you this morning. What was their proposal to us then? In layman's terms.
They were proposing to build an underground garage, approximately 1,500 or 1,600 spaces underground, and to build a park on top of it at their expense.
And no expense from the city?
And no expense to the city.
To the city. All right, so and the challenges to that would be what?
The fact that, there are some concerns and issues. They're asking for a 99-year lease. There would be no revenue to the city, no lease payments to the city for 99 years. Our land value, again, we paid $9.1 million for in 2000 and between 2005 and 2008. It's probably worth a lot more than that today. I would put it probably in the land value, if appraised today, would be in the $20 million range. So they were basically asking for $20 million worth of land for 99 years with no revenues to the city.
Is that an unusual request?
I would consider that an unusual request, yes, ma'am.
All right. Is there a lease agreement for Clyde Warren Park?
No, ma'am.
No, so that wasn't, what was, just update.
We have a development agreement with the Woodall Rogers Park Foundation, where they raised, to leverage the city's $20 million in bond funds that was invested into the park. They raised, in conjunction with the city, $36.7 million from other government, federal, and state sources, and in approximately $55 to $57 million in private funds.
Is there, as we talk about, and we're able to do this with Fair Park, would we have a lease agreement, an agreement similar to this 99 years, sometimes specific?
For Fair Park?
Yes.
That was called a management agreement, mm-hmm. With the, what was approved by the Park Board was a management agreement with a 501c3 organization called the Fair Park Texas Foundation that was, we would give them $17 million in stipend, in an annual stipend, to manage and operate and maintain Fair Park.
All right. So, but to your knowledge now, just so that we can get an understanding, because, of course, it sounds good to have a park that would be paid for and no money from the city, but the 99 years, is that the main hiccup? Would that be the main hiccup in this proposal?
I tell you what, I have not, you know, we never received a formal written proposal. All I can tell you is these are high-level deal points that were presented, and I have not received a formal written proposal to date.
So this particular group.
But those were early concerns when it was first presented to us, was 99 years, no revenue to the city.
Right.
That was one concern.
What would be a quick, would it help if there's no money from the city and we could get it built, would reducing the number of years in the lease be an option possibly?
Well, I'm not sure it's appropriate for me to negotiate here.
Is there someone who could answer this that quickly? Would that be a possibility of that?
That's up to the park board.
All right, so how would that get back to the park board?
Well, we briefed them on October. In October, there was, I would say, lukewarm, very little, or lukewarm acceptance of the project. So it would have to be rescheduled on their briefing agenda.
Okay, so the one that received the, which one received the highest, just for the record? Was there one prioritized here in one of these proposals?
I'm sorry.
Was one of any of these projects rated with priority from the park board?
The park board is in full far majority support of continuing our 12-year relationship with Parks for Downtown Dallas and the Belo Foundation in developing and implementing this master plan, of which Pacific Plaza was one, is one component.
Okay.
If that explains
it. Well, I guess for me, since we've talked about Fair Park, is the question would be, since we had the debate about RFPs going out, was an RFP sent out as it relates to this one group getting the nod? Or do you follow what I'm saying?
Again, we've had a 12-year relationship. We did not send out an RFP 12 years ago. Parks Belo Foundation, Deckard Foundation, Parks for Downtown Dallas stepped forward and became a partner, just as the Dallas Zoo, Dallas Zoological Society, the Dallas Arboretum, and Turtle Creek Association. We have numerous partners that we don't have, did not solicit through the RFP process.
Okay, and I think probably as I wrap up, one of the things I'm learning on the council, and I think this came up with Fair Park, is that there was a push to push it back out to an RFP process. Am I right?
There's currently an RFQ with the intent of issuing an RFP in
all
the
right.
future for Fair Park.
Our first option was with Mr. Heumann. So the I think with me, the concern, since I'm learning a little bit about City Hall, what is their minority participation in that profile? Was this just a handshake, good old boy system, or is it now time for us to do RFP? Because we are asked as a representative of my district to push for jobs and inclusion. And so that would be my concern as we move forward. Instead of just embracing one group, I think we need to look at that. And I do want to share that with my council members, too, is that we want to make sure we have inclusion. I've watched quite a bit today, and I still get a little bit peeved because we don't have diversity, and folks are coming here and asking us for city dollars. No African Americans, no Hispanics, and they're telling me what's good for the southern sector. And so that's why I need to continue sometimes with my same position. I've got to keep pushing for my people, the District 4 constituents, and those in the southern sector who are blended African Americans, Hispanics, black, white, and brown, but we still get the exclusion when they're coming here asking for the money to speak what's best for the southern sector. Thank you.
Did you have an answer for her in regards to the participation?
I'm sorry, in regards?
Do you have an answer for Ms. Arnold in regards to the participation?
Participation?
She asked a question.
Well, contract with any of our partners requires them to comply with and to make good faith efforts on all of their contracts that are not managed by the city.
But you don't have an answer to that question. I mean, that's how you go by.
Yes.
I just want to make sure.
Well, no,
yes.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm actually thankful that you asked that question because I need to get those profiles today in terms of their 12-year relationship, just how much inclusion they have with minority contractors and workers and projects and directors, board of directors, their outreach to the southern sector. If you have that, I think it helps to clear the water. Right now, the water is muddy, and the grass is truly brown. Thank you.
Mr. Medrano?
Thank you, Mayor. So I'm kind of going to hit along with what Mr. Kleiman said as far as what is citywide projects. I met with staff as far as the amount of bond money that's coming to District 2. And after looking at it, it kind of doesn't quite add up. So I was asking, where's the money, all the money? So to my knowledge, staff has spent pretty much maybe $300 million on what they feel are priorities. I really believe that this bond, if we're going to go out there and we're going to sell it, we need to split it evenly, and we all know what our districts need. And we can all get the projects in our districts that we really, really need and the community's asking for. So I don't think I'm going to be able to let staff go ahead and spend the money and say, you have $25 million for streets and you have $4 million to do everything else in your district. When you look at the district I represent, which has many entertainment districts, where that $4 million is not going to get us anything. And I think it's the same with all of you guys as you're finding out when you're meeting with the staff. So we need to wake up. I don't know if this is how it's done in the past, but I know under my watch it's not going to happen. So I'm going to fight for District 2. I know everybody's going to fight for their own districts, and I think this money needs to be split evenly with the mayor, and the mayor's money can go towards city projects. So I hope y'all guys join me because I know that my staff, my community is asking for a lot. So hopefully I got your ear, and we're going to take this back because you know what? Eventually we're the ones going to be selling this bond program. They're going to want us to be out there selling this bond program, and I don't think I can do it if District 2 and everybody else's districts aren't equally being given the money they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Magoo.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I pushed my button just to agree with Mr. Medrano, echo the comments that Kleinman said earlier. I have not had my meeting yet, but if what I'm hearing is how this is supposed to be or getting presented to us, I won't be supporting that. I want clarity on what is a citywide project and what's district specific. And I look forward to having a most equitable dispersion as we possibly can. And when we look at whether it's the Loop or the downtown parks, I love leveraging the private resources and every chance we get. But with the needs we have, I can't support it until I know we're addressing all the needs in all of our districts. So thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Clayton.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd like to see you in that head seat there. Great job. I think I'm ninth in line to the presidency right now. So, Mr. Winters, as far as citywide parks, I know I just had my bond meeting, and I was told that White Rock Lake is a neighborhood park now. So my $4 million needs to go to a park that has 1 million people go to it each year. How much is White Rock considered a neighborhood park right now or a city park?
No, sir. White Rock Lake is a regional signature park.
So a neighborhood park, basically. So it's not being considered in the same thing as, like, this example, right? These are citywide parks, but White Rock is a neighborhood.
White Rock certainly serves a major neighborhood component in it, but in past bond programs, we've always classified it as a citywide because it attracts people from all over the region.
Right, but this time it's not, correct?
In a small bond program, I guess it's, but you can look on it as the best route to getting funding might be through a neighborhood project.
Okay. I'm going to echo what Mr. Medrano says. I think as we all look at what our individual needs are, you know, for example, the Loop Trail doesn't go through my district, but I can absolutely see what the value of having it is. And, you know, I want to make an educated decision, you know, not based on what, you know, a lobbyist does to get to the front of the line, but based on where I want to allocate the money that I'm accountable for to the citizens of my district to say, I'm going to take some away from our area to give to the greater good. And I think Mr. Medrano and Mr. McGee's, you know, point, and Mr. Kleinman and others make a very fair point that I personally feel, even in my own area, and I'm not advocating for White Rock Lake, but if the lake has 1 million people in its neighborhood and something else, whatever the project gets, 20,000, and that's pushed to the front of the line, matching or not, that just seems like a fallacious argument to me. And I would just, I think I'm to the same degree that I think we need to relook at this, because I'll certainly be in support of projects like this, but I want to be able to make that choice, and I don't want to be told you get $4 million, you can't do flood protection for 30 houses that get flooded every year, and we want you to fund $1 million or 1 million person park out of neighborhood funds. all because of decisions being pre-made. So anyway, I just wanted to make sure I had that on the record. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor. Willis, thank you for a very excellent briefing, and I've been following this, and I've had Mr. Deckard in my office a couple of times, and just excellent work. When was Crawford Park established as a signature park?
We were trying to balance. This is, probably goes back to before the 2006 bond program, when we recognized that our signature park was for the city was White Rock Lake Park, and that we needed balance the investment throughout the city with by creating signature parks in the southern sector. So we designated, park staff designated Crawford and Keast Park as signature parks in the southern sector to balance other signature parks, but White Rock Lake. Also, we were trying to take the burden off of White Rock Lake by investing in these other parks to give people a reason to stay closer to their home and have the same amenities and park facilities closer to where they reside.
Yeah, I think you segued exactly where I wanted to go. There's no doubt White Rock is the preeminent park in the city, and that's my favorite park. That's where I love to go outside of Fair Park. But, again, Crawford Park has that opportunity to become a lake, a trail, and all that stuff, again, to take off the pressure of White Rock Lake because it's so well-traveled, really over-traveled. And as this city begins to grow population-wide, it's going to be even more so. And I tell you, Keast, I went there as a kid, a beautiful park. And I would love to see Keast and also Crawford, you know, realize their full potential. The challenge, you know, that we're having, you know, when I first was getting elected in 2013, there was already that master plan had already been approved. So there's been pressure by the citizenry, like, yeah, we see this in our grasp. Let's go get that done. So that's my marching orders has been streets and Crawford Park, really, you know, among a few other things, getting rid of the dogs that's running through the neighborhood. But if we don't do that, if we don't get a stipend or a down payment in this bond campaign, then it's arguably going to be 4 or 5 more years before we get the initial part to do that. You said when I first came here that it was going to take 3 bond campaigns, and that was going to be 12 to 15 years. So, colleagues, you can see how negative that can be for Southeast Dallas. We don't have a signature park. Every part of town has a signature park. You can make the argument, well, you got the horse park, or you've got the Audubon, you've got the golf course, but they're not in District 5. They're west of District 5. They're going to help District 5. They're going to be, you know, catalytic for District 5. But we need something that the citizens of District 5 can actually go to. Also, I have 1 recreation center, and I also have, you know, Umphrey's really as a half one. And it was really never built to be a very long term, as you said. Well, it's about a 30-year center. Well, it's worn out. It needs to be renovated. Fortunately, Pleasant Oaks has been renovated. So when we look at downtown and we look at these other Tony signature things, you know, I have to advocate for what's important to me. Mr. Clayton said it very well, Mr. Madrona, Mr. Kleinman, and others, that there's only so much money out there. And as I said in my earlier comments about the Loop Trail, the same thing is there. There's no doubt that that will have a major effect on my area. But, again, we've got to do what's right for the people that we represent. And it would be unbelievable to come May after 4 years in office and not being able to deliver anything. You know, congratulations, Callahan. You got the worst streets in district, and also you couldn't get Crawford Park done. Why are you there? And that's a legitimate argument. So when we've kind of done ourselves in, colleagues, we said, you know, we don't want to do the $1.1 billion. Let's do $800 million because we want to do a pay-as-you-go. But because of this, all of these extra projects that we've put out there, which are very good, we've shrunk this size of what can benefit our respective districts. And like you said, Councilman, $4 million, that's not much. $25 million maybe for roads, $4 million for other things. That is not delivering on the campaign promises or even the reality promises. How long must Southeast wait? We joined the city in 51, 52, in that range right there, and it's been very little added to that core, you know, assets in that city, you know, since we've been there.
And that's really unbelievable. Kind of makes you wonder why people even join the city of Dallas. And so we want to get our fair share. We want to be a part of the city. We don't want to be known as Pleasant Grove, Texas. We want to be known as part of the city of Dallas. We want to be known as Southeast. So the only thing that we can do is move forward to try to get Crawford Park, at least get me $5 or $6 million, you know, this year, so we can begin that process. Again, taking the pressure off of White Rock. And that's what I'm going to be advocating for. So I'm going to be very, very careful when I add the dollars and cents up, and I want to make sure we get the biggest bang for our buck. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just want to echo some of the sentiments expressed by my colleagues, Lee Kleinman and Adam Andrano, and I think also Mr. Magoo. I share the concerns about how some of the money we split up in this bond program. I know there's $320 million set aside for citywide projects, but I know some districts are only receiving maybe $1 million of that $320 million, about 0.3% of it. And so that's very troubling, because I think I support citywide projects, but certainly all districts have citywide assets. And to me, it's becoming quite subjective about what is citywide and what isn't citywide. And then those of us with citywide assets in our districts that have needs, just like everything else, are being asked to cover them with $4 million. And then go to the voters and say, go ahead and support this. And so that's a concern. So I'd encourage everyone to ask when you have your bond meeting, when you sit down with Mr. Gonzalez and his staff, ask how much of the $320 million is going to your district. I think many of you will be surprised that the money is being very asymmetrically spread throughout the city, even though we all have great citywide assets from Pleasant Grove, Oak Cliff, North Dallas. And so those certainly need to be recognized. We don't want to create two classes of citywide assets here, where we've got some citywide assets that are recognized by management and fully supported by $320 million. And then you've got a citywide asset in your district, and you're asked to support that with only $4 million. And I think the big thing is to always, we should all have the voters in mind here. They're ultimately going to be paying the tab on this bond program through their tax dollars, and they're going to see a return on it. So certainly I'd encourage city staff to look at what is the meaning of the term citywide, and how can we recognize the citywide assets throughout our great city and not just pick a few in a few areas. I think that will make for a much better bond program, Mr. Gonzalez. So, but I do want to thank you for you, Mr. Gonzalez, and, of course, Willis, for your continued work on this bond program. And I look forward to continuing the conversation on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Quick question. Oh, I didn't see you, Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'll be very quick. I think what my colleagues have identified is that staff's, and I haven't had my meeting yet, so I'm not really sure how they came up with this, is that staff's proposal for how to allocate bond funds is not what this council wants. And I'm a little frustrated because I feel like we've been fairly clear about it. The exercise that we did with the Monopoly money, for instance, well, there's a real easy way to read that exercise. We all had $800 million. There are 15 of us. You multiply $800 million by 15, and then divide it out by the projects, and you get a number that I think you have to have $480 million in the pot to indicate 8 votes. It's something like that. I did the math earlier. I can't remember what it was. But clearly what the staff has proposed to put in citywides has more stuff than this council has supported, at least in straw votes or in exercises up until now. So Mr. Medrano has proposed one idea for allocating the funds, which is equal division 15 ways, and the mayor is responsible for citywides. That's one way to do it. The way we've done it in the past is allocated a certain amount of money for equal division among the 14 districts, and then we all decide what goes in the citywide pile. That's another way to do it. There are any number of ways to do it, but I think that's the next discussion we need to have is how do we want to build this package? Mr. Kleinman was very adamant early on that we not start from a number, that we do start from a number and budget what we want to borrow in total and then divide that up among the things that are priorities to us. I think that's yet another good approach. But what we need to have is clarity from the council about what the approach is. Staff doesn't get to decide that, frankly. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Ms. Gates?
Thanks. Just a quick question. So the $3 to $4 million discretionary per district, that wasn't really briefed in the last briefing, but that's what's included in the conversations we're having one-on-ones. I haven't had my one-on-one yet. Is that?
If I might.
I think there's some clarification for the public because I haven't seen that, and I don't think we've made that public to our citizens. So, but some council members have been privy to that information because they mentioned it.
Right. At the last meeting that we had on regarding the bond program, there was a discussion about all the various goals and objectives that the council as a whole was trying to achieve. The primary one, of course, was limiting it to $800 million. The second was a very high priority with regards to streets. And if you take just those two alone, that really has a very limiting amount then that is left. Now, at the end of the meeting, we were asked to see about visiting with the council members to get some notion of an idea of how that might look like with regards to not only those directions, but the other directions as well with regards to other projects of one kind or the other. And what we put together was, if you will, just a structure which was in its hopes to see about translating the various things that we were hearing from the council in terms of projects. One of the things that was very much involved was the leveraging of dollars, which Mr. Kleinman has talked about. It so happens that a lot of those are in downtown, which it's kind of a little ironic that Mr. Kingston would seem to suggest that was not the way to go because most of those are in his area. But regardless, the point is that we were trying to put together something that would address what the specifics or the overall objectives that the council was articulating. And of course, that always can be changed as it's brought forward. But we were trying to address those.
I'm going to interfere with this a bit because I think this is although there's a discussion regarding the parks and the how it's matching the bonds, I think some of these conversations are not related to.
Okay, I'll go back to the park then. I was just trying to understand.
So
I mean,
stay with that.
I think what I was hearing is there's some opposition to these citywides that have been presented today because of the limited amount of funds that are going to be going to at discretionary per district, which I think just illustrates the challenges that we're faced with our limited resources and being able to really continue to move the city forward. And it is frustrating that we're having to move it forward by taking care of deferred maintenance and that we've neglected things in the past, but now we're having to take care of it and we can't use the money. And I think Mr. Kleinman expressed this eloquently, is that we can't use the money to move the city forward with the projects that we should be using bond money for, which is about economic development and investment, and instead we're being forced to use it to correct deferred maintenance. These are great today. Thank you, Willis, for these presentations. I know you've been working a long time on a plan, and so we get kind of embedded and we just – it seems like it's time, and I know that's the kind of frustration I have with regarding libraries. It's like we had this plan, and then we don't have the money to move forward on the plan, and then we're kind of at that crossroads now. You've been working really hard, and we've got great matching money, and now we're like, how can we not move forward? And it sounds selfish if we want something in our district instead of moving forward with this, but it's all a balance. I think we'll hash it out, and on top of it, we'll hash out other demands on our other issues within our city, and we'll come to a solution. But these are, I mean, these are much needed parks in our urban core, and we're just going to have to figure out a balance how we have the, you know, these, because some of these are, I think, neighborhood parks meeting neighborhood needs, but they are going to really, I think they're transformative in the fact that they're going to continue to allow us to have the kind of the urban core that I think so many other great cities have. And the Loop is another great project that is really going to help our entire city. But it's just, it's all challenging with the limited resources we have. But thank you for the presentations, and we'll look forward to the discussions going forward.
Thank you. Real quick, Mr. Kingston.
Extremely briefly, Madam Mayor. Mr. Gonzalez, I wasn't suggesting that we not fund downtown parks or the Loop Trail. I've been very clear in saying I'm for that, and I hope my colleagues will be. What I'm saying is that your staff's idea of telling these council members that they have no more than $25 million for streets and then $4 million for everything else that they need to do in their districts is not the way that this council wants to allocate the money and is probably designed to ruin the citywide. So I'm critical of your approach. I'm not saying that we shouldn't fund these important citywide projects. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
I think that was a conversation that we all had, and I'm going to support the staff because the staff is basically going to each and every one of us as we had indicated for them to go. So I think we have to be respectful to the staff. They are doing what they were asked to do, and that is exactly to go to each and every one of you, what your thoughts are. Not this is what we're doing. So let's be respectful to the staff and be able to share your thoughts and make sure that we go to that. Mr. Winters, I have a question, a couple of questions real quick. You said that first it was 30-something and then it was 40. I saw that written down somewhere. You said that they're requesting for 30-something and now it's 40. Oh, yeah. It was 35 and now it's 44.
Yes, ma'am.
Where did the numbers come? I saw four parks. So how much and or what are you suggesting in regards to the recommended for the four?
The 35 million was the original request for matching bond funds to be matched by 35 million from Parks for Downtown Dallas and from the Carpenter family who is investing in Carpenter Park. Recently, Parks for Downtown Dallas has indicated to the park department that they're increasing their private match to $44 million to put in the land that they have purchased at Harwood Park, which has a value of $9 to $10 million. So that's how it's gone up from $35 million to $44 million. Originally, that land was not part of the match.
But they're not asking for $44 million.
My question is, first it was 35 and then it was 44. My question is, in the four, I'm thinking, okay, just 10 each, for example, right? That would be 40-something. Am I incorrect?
Oh, you're talking about what's the allocation for each park?
What is the thought?
They each have a different construction budget. Let's see. So Carpenter Park, the construction budget is $20 million. Pacific Plaza, the construction budget is $35 million, so that's 35 there. Harwood Park construction budget is $19 million, and West End Plaza, the construction budget is approximately $10 million. So I'm not sure what that adds up to, 35, 60 to $70 million. So that would be roughly half city, half Parks for Downtown Dallas.
Okay. Because if I heard Ms. Arnold correctly on the unsolicited proposal for page, I think it's 8, it was something that you all either had conversed and it hasn't, and it was brought to the, I think it's on page 9. Am I right or wrong? Yes. How I understood you is that you went before the economic development, you went before the park board, to present to them, but nothing was discussed further, meaning that there is nothing that was conversed with them in accordance. And, I mean, from what I understand, if there's something that is there, you can take away that and not have to worry about it, and we can use it at somewhere else, as many of our colleagues are talking about wanting to do XYZ. So I want to understand.
Well, when it was briefed to the park board on October the 20th, the park board indicated very little interest in pursuing, in fact, no interest in pursuing the project. There was, we received no direction to continue a dialogue or to pursue an underground parking garage.
So it just died right there, because first you talked about the underground, I mean the above ground, and then there was a conversation, I guess you could say, because you said there was nothing presented to you. First you said that you didn't know, then you said it was presented to you, and then you said you don't know where, I mean, you were sharing information, but nothing was given to you, so where did you get that information from? I'm just curious.
I'm sorry, what information?
You were answering the questions in regards to that, but then you said that it was nothing that you had with yourself or had been presented to you.
Yeah, they've not made they've never submitted a formal written proposal to us. There have been conversations and in the briefings presented to economic development in the park.
Well, I was trying to understand that question to you. So I was trying to understand where you got the answers from. So that's what I wanted to ask, and I am very concerned, or I want to know, to make sure that when we partner with the folks that we partner with, that there is participation as we do it in the city of Dallas. I don't know if that is something that you, each department looks into. I know about the good faith effort, but I want to make sure that the NWB is always presented for any of the projects that we have, whether we're partnering or not. There was one more question. Oh, no, that was answered. Okay. Well, that's all I had, and thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I think that was it.
I had one
I'm going to ask Ms. Grayson to go first because she has not spoken.
That's probably fine. Thank you, Madam Mayor. And you all have probably said this, or Willis, you probably said this, but I just wanted to reiterate that although Parks for Downtown Dallas has raised $44 million, they're not asking for $44 million in the match. They're staying with $35
million. That's correct. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that because I thought, you know, perhaps there may be some misunderstanding that they've upped their request in the bond program, and they have not.
They have not.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold.
So much. And of course, I would love to have a proposal that would not require any city dollars. And I would love to have the opportunity to serve our constituents. But if we have to give money, then I want to reiterate again my need to fight for District 4 as it relates to the necessities and not the amenities. Because we still have a difficult time trying to understand how a park put in place, and we have almost in District 4 probably 88 parks and recs, we still don't have a grocery store, we still don't have restaurants, and so adding another park, in my case, in District 4 is still mind-boggling. So if it takes another park to come to the southern sector to stimulate economic development, we're still confused because we have a number of parks and have a premier park with Keys Park. So by now I would think that everyone should be running to the southern sector, so we're still perplexed. So I will continue to fight for, as Mr. Adam Madrano said, the division of money so that our constituents are equitable in the process. But I think what I also want to ask, and I don't think I am going to ask because I want it on the record, we talked about the proposed deck park, for example, in the southern sector, but we don't talk about the maintenance. And in our case, Clyde Warren, I believe, right now is running about $1.2 million. Am I correct, Mr.? With maintenance, about $1.2 million, that's the tunnel. So is there an additional maintenance for the park that we incur?
The operating budget for the park itself is around $3.5 million.
Is that a year, month?
A year.
So constituents know. So on these parks, with the park in particular for the maintenance, what would be the projection? Would the maintenance fall on the city for each one of these parks?
For the downtown park?
Yes, these parks that you're proposing.
It would vary from park to park and from partnership to partnership.
except for the one with the 99-year lease, my understanding that the maintenance would not come to the city. Is that, was that ever discussed?
If there's a nonprofit foundation set up, as is my understanding, if that's proposed, then they would be responsible for
it. All right, so the proposal for the 99-year lease, that group would probably have to take care of the maintenance and then just hold on to it for 99 years. I'm just trying to understand what a free park might look like, to a certain extent free. So we're not asking for city, they're not asking for any city money, but you have not received a formal request. Is that what you're saying?
There's been no formal written proposal.
All right. Did we request that from that group?
Did I request that?
Did we as a city request some formal input from the group?
I don't recall if there's been a conversation on that.
So would the who would know the answer to that? If you now, I guess I'm following up on what she's saying here. Who did you talk to? Who do we talk to from this particular group that would ask them to be in a position to say we need an RFP or we need something formal, or do we just let them come in to talk?
Well, Ms. Arnold, I'd be glad to sit down and go over all of this with you and download my knowledge and experience on it. I can tell you that at one point they were going straight to the city council or bypassing the park board. So that's probably why there wasn't a formal written proposal to the board, to the park department, because they intended to go to the city council.
Well, I don't have I'm all for transparency, so you don't have to worry about that. I'm listening to you, but I normally just like for my constituents to know what we're doing down here.
And the only document that I have seen is that they did draft a contract that was presented to council members, but not to the park department. I happen to have a copy of that.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, too. But I really, for all of the council members and the constituents who are listening, it's very important that they know what I know in terms of the public discussions, and that's really where I'm coming from today. But with everything else being said, I will continue to fight for the streets and the infrastructure that District 4 sorely needs as we move forward. Thank you very much, Madam Mayor, and thank you, council members, and those in the audience and those at home who continue to reach out to us for education on just how we're spending the tax dollars.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold. Ladies and gentlemen, it is now 11:55 a.m. on November 15, 2016, and the City Council will now go into closed session under Sections 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters described in today's agenda: the legal issues related to the Dallas Police and Fire Pension System, Kenneth E. Albert and others versus the City of Dallas, Anthony Arredondo et al. Versus the City of Dallas, David L. Barber et al. Versus the City of Dallas, David S. Martin et al. Versus the City of Dallas, and George G. Parker et al. Versus the City of Dallas, Kevin Michael Willis et al. Versus the City of Dallas. And we will return after that, and the meeting will be adjourned at that time. If y'all could please excuse us and... It is now 1 p.m. and the City Council has completed its closed session under Section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act, and at 1:01 p.m. on November 15, we have returned to open session. Excuse me, at 1 p.m. with 28 seconds. And it is 1 o'clock with 31 seconds, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you, colleagues.